Haramai, good morning. This is Judith Leigh welcoming you to Manx Radio and to the podcast of this week's edition of At Your Service. Manx Radio. If I had to describe my guest this morning in just a few words, I'd say that he is a glass half full person. He's met challenges in his own life with courage and positivity, and has dedicated his working life to reaching out with compassion and understanding to other people with challenges to face. So, who is he? He's Philip Longworth, and he knows the island well through regular visits over the past 10 years. But maybe we don't know him quite so well. But he's set to become a familiar face as he lives here now and has just taken up a newly created position within the Church of England that'll see him roving around the entire island. We'll be finding out about that and much more when I chat with Philip in a few moments. But first, let's share some music. Award-winning Wallingford Parish Church Choir with a hymn that's always in the top 10 most popular. Dear Lord and Father of mankind, forgive our foolish ways. Dear Lord and Father of Mankind, sung there by the choir of Wallingford Parish Church in Oxfordshire. My special guest this morning has just been appointed to a brand new role in the Anglican Diocese of Soder and Man. And uniquely, it has the potential to benefit everyone because, at its heart, it's about building community. We'll find out more about it later in the programme. But right now, let's meet the man himself, Philip Longworth.
Philip, good morning and welcome.
Hi, Judith. Hi, everyone.
Before we talk about the job that you're doing here on the island, let's find out a little bit about you. So where did you grow up, Philip?
I was born in Burton Wood, little village somewhere between Liverpool and Warrington. And I went to school at St Vincent's School for the Blind in Liverpool because I've got a sight problem as well. Catholic-based school, Catholic-based origins in my sort of growing up years.
How difficult was that, going away to boarding school?
I think you get used to it because you don't know any different. But I can remember vividly lying in bed on Sunday evening and I would walk the route home that we'd just come to bring me to school and fall asleep just as I was going in the back gate. It clearly emotionally did drain and you tapped back into family again on Friday. So it was a two worlds life, if you like, I suppose.
Looking back on that education now, was it empowering? Were you made to feel that your sight problems were minor and that you could take the world on? Was it a positive experience?
It was for me in terms of the big emphasis as well as education was we've got to get these kids' confidence up. And if we get the confidence up, they'll probably integrate and get on in most settings. And I think people who know me would say, he's pretty in your face, you know. he's not frightened to say, and he'll get up in front of crowds and all that stuff. And I will do. I don't like the attention on me that much, but I'm quite happy to do what needs to be done. But yeah, their emphasis was on confidence. And that in turn, you didn't even notice that you had a sight problem again, because it was all provided for in the medium that you needed to work. You know, so at that level, it was good.
Yeah. What part did faith play when you were growing up? You say you're from a Catholic background and St Vincent's is a Catholic organisation. So what part did faith play looking back on those years?
I think they were grounding years in so much that I look back now and think there's the traditions that you went through. You know, you went to church. The priest would come to your home on a Friday night or whatever. And I think what school probably did to widen that for me was you would begin to realise there's other elements to the world and other people who have got needs. So I remember we would do evening prayers after we'd done the youth club. And one particular teacher would always say, let's be mindful of those who have not got a roof over their heads tonight. And that stuck with me for my life, you know, because it's about other people, their needs. And what I've learned then over the years in the various roles I've had is people find themselves in certain situations sometimes at no fault of their own. It's just their life pattern and pathway that's developed, and that's where they end up. So I think the Christian wanting to be kind, wanting to care, wanting to share, wanting to speak up for, that's probably there from the word go and hasn't left me. You know,
it's a wonderful thing, as we're going to discover when we talk more about your work. If you put that into somebody's life, they're not going to go far wrong, and you've built on that. So when you left school, what did you do, Philip?
You were a big fish in a small pool. When you actually left the boarding school and went to the big world, it was a whole different ball game. I went to study music because I was relatively good at playing the clarinet. And that's, if you like, my first encounter with the sighted world. That was the culture shock. You were travelling, you know, in school. I got up and went downstairs and you were in school. You know, this was an hour journey to college every day. And I couldn't sight read quickly enough. I could sight read music, just not quickly enough. I could get into all the playing orchestras. That was no problem at all, technically. And they'd often shout, all right, bar 77 we're doing now. And by the time I'd found bar 77, they'd finished playing that and they were shouting bar 143. And that actually just became too much for me. It was too stressful, too frustrating. And probably the first time I used the word fail, if I put it in the context of I couldn't do that properly, so I need to do things I can do, you know, not frustrate myself with the things I can't. So I finished, and in those days you couldn't go into any other study course from a January because it was starting September and everything starts in September. And then I looked for work. I was fortunate to get offered a job in a tool supply company and did everything in that company. Started in the stock room, just picking stock. A small family firm, I ended up in sales. And actually, they employed a driver then to take me round as a sales rep, which was totally unknown of in those days, because I could do it. Gift of the gab as well, I think, you know. But I knew I wanted to come into some sort of social care, I wasn't sure quite what, but social care role. And I think my experience then over the time when I left school and went into the real world, if you like, then sort of focused me a bit on, I don't know whether I can help some of the visually impaired people here, just be prepared, cope with, have the personality to ask for what they need, and realise your vision is a part of your life. It's not you, it's not the personality, you know, and your life doesn't necessarily have to stop. So I trained then to be a technical officer, which was teaching blind adults who were losing their sight a whole range of skills. And that's where, again, I tap back in then with the religious bit, because that was with the Catholic Blind Institute that got my first job. So I sort of started my career with the Catholic Blind Institute, and we'll learn where I've ended it in a moment.
Having a role model, a blind person, a deaf person, is incredibly empowering for somebody who's struggling with something that they really don't want to admit.
I wasn't losing my sight, and I think there is a big, big psychological difference in that. But in day-to-day living terms, those people often didn't have to tell me because they believed I understood. And sometimes that's quite hard, because when you're going through that initial diagnosis or the loss, you can't put it into words because it's too big, you know, and people try and say, tell me. And actually the best way is just ease back and let people come to terms with it a little bit and support them at the stages they need.
So from there, how did things develop for you, Philip?
After working, sort of doing the rehab job, the technical job, I then went to the RNIB to join their employment support team. And that's where my first bit of relationship came with the Isle of Man, because the Isle of Man was on my patch. So I would spend time, whether it was across or on the island, visiting people employment who needed equipment adapting, so computers to talk or have large character displays. So that would be in employers over here, like government, like Barclays Bank, you know. And I'd do the assessment and look at what kit they might need. And then the treasurer used to write a cheque in the old days. And that role lasted for about 8 or 9 years on and off. But I was over here 2-3 times a year for a week at a time. So pretty quickly, if you're open, you've got to look for it and respect it. But you get an idea, the island is the island. It's got its own personality. It's got its own traditions, which I love traditions anyway. And it's got a whole load of characters.
Now, I want to get you to the island quickly, but I don't want to skip out anything that you did. Mm. After the RNIB, what was the next stage there?
Worked for Age Concern then. I got my first chief executive's job working for a charity. And I suppose part of the key message in that one was looking at income generation, trying to sustain these organisations who were beginning to struggle big time. And also we merged, then I did quite a lot of mergers at that time. Then I moved from there to another chief exec role with Bradbury Fields in Liverpool, which is the local society for the blind. And again, with them, it was watching the sustainability on income as much. Fantastic services in all of the places, if I'm honest. And I just saw my role as conducting the orchestra and then just trying to maintain sustainability for the future. Because we're only stewards in these roles. It's not about us and our big personalities. At the end of the day, you've got people's lives in your hand, and not just the people you're serving, but your staff and your volunteers too.
I'm always keen to include hymns and sacred music chosen by my guests, particularly if, like Philip, music plays a significant part in their life. When I asked Philip if there was perhaps something that reminded him of those years at school, he didn't hesitate before choosing Lord of the Dance.
It's got a story that in some ways it makes me smile, because I used to play in the school band for services. And when Lord of the Dance came along, it's got a bit of oomph to it, a bit of spirit, and we love this. And the school music group's pretty good musically, so they could improvise pretty well. And when this came on, by verse two, we were in full flight. We were jazzing it up something chronic. We did get told off for it. We didn't quite play it the same way again, but it always brings sort of an affectionate memory back for me.
I danced in the morning when the world was young. I danced in the moon and the stars and the sun. I came down from heaven and I danced on the earth. At Bethlehem I had my birth. Dance, dance, wherever you may be. I am the Lord of the dance, said he. And I lead you all, wherever you may be. And I lead you all in the dance, said he. I danced for the scribes and the Pharisees. They wouldn't dance, they wouldn't follow me. I danced for the fishermen, James and John. They came with me, so the dance went on. Dance, dance, wherever you may be. I am the Lord of the dance, said he. And I lead you all, wherever you may be. And I lead you all in the dance, said he. I danced on the Sabbath and I cured the lame. The holy people said it was a shame. They whipped, they stripped, they hung me high. Left me there on the cross to die. Dance, dance, wherever you may be. I am the Lord of the dance, said he. And I lead you all, wherever you may be. And I lead you all in the dance, said he. Dance with the devil on your back. They buried my body, they thought I was gone. But I am the dance and the dance goes on. Dance, dance, wherever you may be. I am the Lord of the dance, said he. And I lead you all, wherever you may be. And I lead you all in the dance, said he. They cut me down and I leapt up high. I am the life that will never, never die. I live in you if you live in me. I am the Lord of the dance, said he. Dance, dance, wherever you may be. I am the Lord of the dance, said he. And I lead you all, wherever you may be. And I lead you all in the dance, said he.
Well, that's the liveliest version of Lord of the Dance that I could find from the Dubliners featuring Jim McCann, bringing back memories of school music for my guest, Philip Longworth, who has recently taken up a new post in the Church of England on the island. And curiously enough, says it was an opportunity that arose through the COVID lockdown.
My partner and I have been together now for 12, 13 years, backwards and forwards. Jobs not that available on the island where there wasn't going to be somebody on the island that could do it. And COVID came along. I ended up here and worked from here really successfully, if I'm honest, because a lot of the direct services other than the emergency services across, we'd had to close. So it was all around fundraising strategy. And we did that exceptionally well with, I've got to say, from my point of view, not as many distractions as normal, because you can get on with the task, which was really, really good. And we got on well together, which was promising. Decided then that we were going to bite the bullet, really, and actually buy somewhere over here, believing that I'd end up travelling back that way for work, you know, and but the base of my residence would be here. And then very quickly, after we'd unlocked and we were starting to travel again, the job came up with the Church of England Diocese on the island, looking for somebody to focus on what they term giving, which is about generous donation, but the wider mix of income generation, whether it's the use of your buildings, the need to apply for trust funds, what's the mix of community fundraising, and how can we gel all of that together and make it work for the different parishes in different ways? Because, as I say, it's not just the island with a personality. I've learned all these little geographies have got their own personalities and heritage. And heritage to me is really important. It's there as a possibility to actually do exactly what I was brought in to try and achieve, which is share the word and generate income to support the future.
But I think that the huge advantage that you bring with you is its fresh eyes. You've really got the best of both worlds, because you understand the island from having been a frequent visitor here. Mm. But sometimes we can be too close to really see either the good things that we've got, the opportunities that we miss, or sometimes the realities that we don't want to face. Mm. So we need somebody to just bring a different slant on the whole thing, don't we?
Yeah, there's some fantastic bits of income generation developments already happened, but I'm not so sure how many people really know about it. And part of what I'm looking for, this is not just about, we need money, we'll always need money, but it's not about that ask, because people tend to just associate that with, oh, they want to protect this building and it needs a bell tower or whatever it is. yes, we'll do that if we're going to continue to use whatever buildings we're going to continue to use. We've got to maintain them. But the bottom line is we're doing so, so much in the community, whether it's luncheon clubs, it's activity classes, whatever it is. That's what the wider community, I think, needs to understand. Because when I came for interview, I couldn't clock it. Couldn't really tell you from everything I was reading quite what was going on. For me, the church, it's got the exact right place of being the heart of community. So when things like post office were going, I'd have been in there. You know, we'll have a post office in the church. You know, that sort of thing. And that's what we need to protect. And the church is, it's different now for everybody. People don't go to church like they used to. It's not the hallmark of their way of belief. And I think we need to respect that. We've learned through COVID, we can do things in different ways. And some people may stick with those different ways. And we just need to communicate in different ways, you know. And that's not to say we should ever throw out the baby with the bathwater on traditional worships and congregational activity. But there is a need to embrace that difference, I think, as well, so that we protect what we've got for the community in the future.
I was hugely impressed in the New Year's Honours list. More church people than ever received honours. And it was all for not work within the church building. It was church-based, but it was out in the community, yeah, serving the community, particularly during the pandemic. Yeah. If you look down the list of what these people were being acknowledged for, it was everything that you could think of. It wasn't just any one thing like food bank or a meal service. It was all kinds of different things.
What I've learned as well is you've got fantastic clergy on the island. Everybody's tired, and they're tired because of the efforts they had to put in to carry everything through COVID. And, you know, that's the entire clergy. It's the volunteer base as well that just get on with it. So there's a need, I'll check that Mary's okay with the food. You know, that's what the Christian base is about, helping each other as best we can whenever we need to. And I think that, for me, is what the future has to be about. Let's protect this wider community. The rest will fall into place.
So how are you going about doing this? I mean, I'm not going to push you because you've only just very recently been in post.
What's important for me is to visit each parish and actually understand what goes on in the respective churches in those parishes, because they've also got their own individual identities and their own challenges and the great things that they do. So I need to understand all of those elements. And once I understand the differences in churches, then I think it's more appropriate then to really talk to the parish councils and discuss with them what they think are their issues, really. Where would they want to focus some time on? From my visit around, I might say, have you thought of this? Because this might be really good. But I'm not there to push. I'm not here to cymbal bang, because I couldn't do it all, even if I was that sort of character and that person. We can only all do this if we do it together. And if we do it together, it'll be pretty good. But we're going to have to trust in things that for some of us may not feel totally comfortable. But I think it's just the world, it is changing. It has changed massively. It'll continue to change. Technology's driving us in directions we never thought we'd be driven in. And I think, okay, technology is great, but person to person's really important.
Earlier in this conversation, Philip mentioned being a good musician, but his sight problem limited his ability to study it at college as he'd planned. But I really need to know, surely music didn't leave his life altogether?
It came back into my life. I'd not played for years after I'd been at college. And then it was a raining day, pouring down. Mum was away. I took the kids to church. And when we got in, my eldest opened his coat and said, "Dad, here's the clarinet. You can play with the group." So I did that and eventually ended up on keyboard. So I played quite a lot with the children's music group over time. I've played odd weddings, but again, depends what's required, because I don't know all of this. And I'm not, sight reading is not good enough. So I don't put myself under that much pressure. Latterly played in a band. I've played on the Cavern stage.
Excuse me, the real Cavern.
The real Cavern stage, yeah. On a Sunday night where eight bands just came in. And we were playing then with a band that was set up through the local Society for the Blind. So it was a mix of players of visually impaired and able-bodied. But we got where water wouldn't get that group. Music's the key, though. It opens doors. Hymns, for me, the different composition of music speaks to me. I think I take the hymn in through the music. more than necessarily overcompensate on the words, if I'm honest, and if that makes sense. I think to musicians it probably does, because the music talks to you. But, you know, you can have all kinds of hymns in different scenarios and they work relevant to the tone of whatever that service might be.
Just a few moments of gentle reflection from Howard Goodall's Enchanted Voices and a setting of a prayer from the Mass, Agnus Dei. The Latin translates as Lamb of God, who takes away the sins of the world, have mercy on us. And with my thanks to my guest this morning, Philip Longworth, let's end now with a look at our notice board. And we begin in Abbeylands. The annual plough service, which was to be held in Abbeylands Chapel this afternoon, has been cancelled. This is out of respect for the close family of Mr. Billy Cleland, who died suddenly on Friday at his home, surrounded by his family. May he and all who have died in recent days rest in peace and rise in glory. This evening in the Cathedral in Peel, Cathedral organist Dr. Peter Littman will give a concert of popular music, including Bach, Mendelssohn, Floor Peters and Robert Coates. It starts this evening at 5:30. Admission is free, and there'll be a retiring collection in aid of cathedral music. At 6:30 tonight, you're invited to a peaceful, prayerful service of choral evensong in St Peter's Parish Church in Onchan. The choir will be singing Herbert Sumpsian's Magnificat and Nunc Dimittis, and there's a warm welcome for all. On Tuesday the 25th, there's a coffee morning in Port St Mary Methodist Church, and on Thursday the 27th, it's time for tea at 3. Afternoon tea served at 3 o'clock on Thursday afternoon in the sunroom at Balagairy Chapel, with a warm welcome for all. Then on Saturday the 29th, Balafesson Methodist Chapel are having a jumble sale. That's on Saturday afternoon between 2 and 4. Lots of bargains and refreshments available too. Also next Saturday the 29th, Selby Methodist Church have a coffee morning in Ramsey Town Hall. It'll be open from 10 until noon. Next Sunday, it was planned to hold the annual Holocaust Memorial Service in St Mary's Catholic Church in Douglas. But a couple of weeks ago, the organisers felt they should cancel it because of the COVID situation at that time. The preacher at the service would have been His Eminence Cardinal Michael Fitzgerald, who is one of the Catholic Church's leading experts on Islam, Christian-Muslim relations and interreligious dialogue. A Roman Catholic priest with a long, varied and challenging international ministry, the Cardinal retired in 2019 and now works as an assistant priest in an inner-city Liverpool parish. Cardinal Michael will be going ahead with his visit to the island, where he'll be confirming young people in the Roman Catholic churches in Ramsey, Douglas and Port Erin, and I'm pleased to say that he'll be my guest on this programme next Sunday morning, where he'll be talking about his life and sharing some thoughts for Holocaust Memorial Day. Cardinal Michael will also be speaking at an ecumenical service in Onchan Methodist Church next Sunday evening at 6:30. There's a warm welcome for all to what I'm sure will be a really special service. That's next Sunday the 30th at 6:30 in Onchan Methodist Church. And that's all that we have time for now. But I'll be back later, so do please join me if you can tonight at 9 o'clock for Sundown, a rich mix of easy listening music to round off your weekend. And do please email me if you've got items for the notice board or you'd like to request a favourite hymn to be included in a future programme. My email address is judithleigh@manxradio.com. So, till whenever we meet again, this is Judith saying thank you for listening. And I wish you and those you love a blessed and peaceful week and a very good morning. The Nation Station.